It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hey everybody, welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast here from Champions on Baxter. My name is Roddy DeBulsi. I'm your host. I'm joined by Jake Roos, the recruiting editor of UGASports.com, and Jim Donnan, former head coach of the University of Georgia, national title winner. He's been there. He knows what it takes to get there. He knows what it takes to get over the hump, and this is a guy who's done it all, who is giving me great insight into the game, and he will share that with you as this show progresses. But before we get into the ins and outs of the national championship game, we have to thank Champies here on Baxter for letting us come in and wreck their place. We have to thank 11 Live Sports for letting us be on their webpage. Give them a thumbs up, the little like on the 11 Live Sports page. Send in your questions. We will get to them as the show progresses. We also want to thank YourPie for being a sponsor all year long. If you don't want to come here and get the best fried chicken in town or the best tamales in town, or the best tamales I've had pretty much anywhere,
yeah,
or the
catfish,
the fried frog legs. I mean, the what's the cheese sausage and
the cheese sausage and pickle plate. One of my personal favorites.
If you don't want to get that, you can go by YourPie and get a fantastic pizza. They'll you choose everything you want on it. They get it to you in about 7 minutes. It is phenomenal. We want to thank our big friends here at
boy, what a good day to have a Founders Brewing.
Founders Brewing is a big sponsor of the show. We want to thank them very much for having us and letting us drink their beer on air. And not, I mean, they pay us to drink their beer. We have the greatest job in the world.
That's true.
We also want to thank Cable East out in Statham, Robert Wall. I know that he is disappointed today, as are all the Georgia fans. But Robert will be the first one to tell you that was an epic game last night. He loves big battles like that. So thank you, Robert Wall, for sponsoring the show. Shout out to 365 Game Day. If you want to get all your Rose Bowl championship gear, your SEC championship gear, go to 365GameDay/Georgia, or just click on 365 Game Day and hit the Georgia site, and you can get all the stuff you need there. But we reserve our most appreciation for Athens Ford. They are the only Ford dealership in Athens. They are the home of the lifetime powertrain warranty on any new car or a used car up to 80,000 miles. They are fantastic sponsors of this show. They are fantastic sponsors of our website, UGASports.com. So a big shout-out to those guys, winner of three consecutive President's Choice Awards for customer service. So big shout-out to Athens Ford. And I know that entire place over there, every time you go in there, they are huge Georgia fans. And even though they are depressed today, they will still sell you a vehicle.
Go brighten their day, in fact. They would love to.
Hey, getting one of those new Raptors or new Ford F-150s, I mean.
Oh, they got them with the diesel now, and that's very intriguing.
That's
to me.
What we're going to need for the UGA Sports vehicle going forward.
There you go.
Anyway, big shout out to them. It would make you feel better, too. So swing by Athens Ford and pick up a new vehicle. And that kind of leads right into the Athens Ford. They sponsor the first section of the show where we kind of discuss the most pressing topic of the day. And Coach Don, and that would be Georgia coming up short in overtime against the Alabama Crimson Tide. 13-point lead there late in the game. Georgia led most of that game. Alabama was able to tie it up. It goes to overtime. You get them in a second 26 situation, you know, a busted coverage. Alabama wins it. I'll give you my thoughts later, but give us your initial reaction to the game.
Well, first of all, I thought our preparation and ability to attack both sides of the ball and the kicking game was outstanding. The fact that we had a good plan, and, you know, anytime you march the ball on Alabama like we did several times the length of the field, a lot of cylinders were working in the plan. Overall, you know, there were some dubious calls by the officials, but you're going to have those. And I just feel like one or two plays either way. I mean, two very evenly matched teams and two talented teams, two well-coached teams. And from our standpoint, not being able to, you know, cash in the red zone in the first half. You know, we got two field goals there, but that would have been huge. And then, you know, a big turnaround there in the start of the third quarter when they called us for offside, which basically was a guess by the official because he saw the guy moving, but he didn't realize where he started from. So that was a bad call. But overall, I just felt like, you know, you got to give Nick a lot of credit for making that move with Tua, and he gave him some juice, and they just really came in and took advantage of some spectacular athletes, because a lot of times we were in position, they just made plays on us. But overall, I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions. I just don't want to go capsule the whole show here in the first answer.
Oh, you can. It's okay.
But I do feel
– They're tuning in to listen to you, not us.
I do feel like, though, that just watching our team all last week, the way we came back from the Rose Bowl, the way we practiced, our sense of direction was just couldn't have been any better as far as the preparation. And our team was fresh and ready to go. And I thought that, you know, with the exception of maybe the last two possessions and overtime, I thought offensively we did so many good things. It's hard to believe against that Alabama defense. But defensively, you know, in the end, one of our – problems all year has been covering the pass. I mean, that's just no fault of any particular person, but we've talked about it forever that the two positions that we needed to fortify when Kirby got here were O-line and defensive backs, and our defensive backs have improved remarkably all year. But that was just a great example of looking off the safety and throwing the ball deep on the, you know, what we call four vertical. There's a lot of different ways to run that. You know, if the ball's in the middle of the field, sometimes you'll send two slots and you'll go down. Each guy will take a hash mark and then the other guy will be on the number. So you put stress on the safety. But in this particular formation, they were on the hash. So the weak side was only one receiver, but the tight end was the third receiver to the field. And he actually took the position of where a slot would be on the weak side. So he threatened Sanders down the weak hash. And then Parrish, you know, like you normally do on cover two, you just sink as the corner, but he knew he had help over the top and he didn't get it, and because the tight end had held Sanders a little bit. But it's just a good way to run four vertical. They call it Seattle. A lot of teams call it different things, but it was a very good execution by them. I felt like second and 26, I mean, you got to feel like the way their field goal kicker was going, that was a good situation for us.
And I think that's what made that loss hurt so much. You know, Georgia fans, you're up 20-7, and you think, okay, this just grind it out. You've got two of the best backs in the nation, you know, the two most successful, the most successful running back duo in the history pretty much of college football. And it's kind of driving you crazy. You think we can just grind this and grind and go and go. But Alabama, when Tua came in, changed the outcome of that game. Very brass, ballsy coaching call on behalf of Nick Saban to put in a guy inexperienced in the national title game like that and say, okay, we're going to put it on you. He came in, changed it. David Bellamy said that afterwards they weren't quite prepared for Tua as much. He said they spent most of their week working on Jalen Hurts, which makes sense. Hurts was slicing and dicing everybody he faced. So you come in with Tua, the game changes. But to the point, I think the Georgia fans, your hope, as you and I talked about this after the game, Jake, when you saw Alabama coming back, your hopes, I don't say the inevitability, but your hope became less and less and less, and you just got more and more anxious. And then, you know, they had that long drive where they go for the field goal. And a chip shot field goal should have won the game with three. The game ends [S2] Yeah. [S1] On a game-winning field goal, and you saw it coming. But then you got hope. They missed the field goal. And then you get all of a sudden Georgia gets out there, they get sacked, but Rodrigo Blankenship pulls you out. And you're like, okay. And then you get that second and 26. You're like, by God, we are going to win this game. We're going to drive them crazy. And that one.
Just peaks and valleys the whole time.
But that's what just made it worse. That's, I think, the heartbreak comes
like
from
Coach
getting that
McGill.
Hope back
Coach
to
McGill
you.
Coach McGill used to say it all the time. And I thought about it after the game, you know, you got the candy in your mouth, and then they take it out.
Yeah,
that's
it's sweet, and then it's sour. But I mean, and that's not a funny thing; it's just reality. But people go into the mindset of Nick Saban of making a change like that, putting in a unproven player from the standpoint of playing in the games. Every time he's been in a game this year, it's been in a non-competitive situation. I mean, it's been in a situation where they're way ahead, you know. So basically, I think the reason that in my mind they made the move is Hurts looks a lot more to run when he's in trouble than he does to throw. And they felt like that the best way to attack Georgia was throwing the football, whereas Tua looks to throw unless he just can't run. You saw how much longer he held the ball than Hurts did. And they definitely attacked our secondary in the second half. And as you mentioned, it's different when you got a, you know, your mindset going into the game. And one of the keys I sent you, if we get them into third down, can we contain Hurts and make him throw the ball, which we either sacked him or made him. He made the one long run. But conversely, with this kid, it was should have been, can we get off the field if he's throwing the ball? You know, so that's another thing. I thought our protection was maximally – it was awesome all night except for a couple just individual breakdowns. But, you know, this team just reflects on their whole credo is to get lost yardage plays. That's what Alabama does. And athletically, when you just look at some of their guys, some of the plays they made, two plays were really saying in the game to me to typify the athleticism of both teams. First of all, Trenton Thompson coming off the hash and just destroying that guy on a full speed locomotive play.
Yeah. A clean hit.
And it was clean, but it was just
beautiful.
Just,
it was brutal.
And then 99, after he intercepted the ball at 6'7", 270.
309, Coach.
Well, he's 309. I mean, you know, or whatever he is, he looked like a fullback the way he was gliding with the ball. It just showed you the roadmap for the kind of players we're going to have and the kind of players they're going to have. And the thing in my mind that just kept going over last night way into the wee hours of the morning, this Alabama team lost seven guys off that were drafted in the first two rounds last year, and they've got seven or eight in the top 50 for this year. And I think that's a very talented team that
– how many does Georgia have in the top 50 this year?
Well, I mean, for as far as the pros, they got Roquan listed fourth. You know, Sony and Nick are going to be up there, but they're not. I don't think they're in the top two rounds right now. But I think.
But Alabama has seven.
Yeah. Ugh. So I just believe that maximum coaching by us. We played against a guy that's now tied Bear Bryant for the most national titles at Alabama. Certainly. We got six now, so it's no consolation in the fact that we did what we had to do. What makes you really chapped is you're in a position to win and you don't. I mean, when you're ahead 20-7, you feel like you're going to win. But, you know, we were ahead of we were behind last week against Oklahoma, essentially 17 points at half. It came to 14, and they came back and beat us. You know, we came back and beat them, and that's the same situation, you know.
In overtime again.
But it's just both teams very well coached, a lot of talent out there, and a lot of young players are going to be around for a long time.
That was one of the things that I walked away from, Coach, is thinking about, you know, the future of this league with these young guys. It turned into a young man's war last night. I mean, you had obviously Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift contributing a lot, Andrew Thomas at the right tackle position. But on Bama's side, you had Henry Ruggs, Tua, Devontae Smith, who called the touchdown to win it, and also Najee Harris, who kind of came out of nowhere.
I mean, Najee Harris.
Pay attention to 22.
Hey, Najee Harris, seriously, that run he made for a first down when he put his hands down looked like – I mean, looked like he was scratching his ankles and just kept going. And, you know, in the first half – Bo Scarborough and Harris barely touched the ball. I mean, most of the plays Harris was in there, he was trying to block punts. And, hey, give Nislick a lot of credit. I mean, he averages 46 or 47, almost 43 or 4 net on the night. I mean, he did his job. Blankenship, what a yeoman's – I mean, that kick he made when the band was playing at the end of the game in the first overtime, just incredibly knocked one through. He's made 250-yard field goals, you know, in championship situations in the last 2 weeks that are just phenomenal. And he's got a guy coming in who's going to challenge him for his job, too. I mean,
well, he to your point there, Rodrigo Blankenship ends the season 20 of 23 on field goals. And, I mean
– and pretty damn the good from 50, I believe, yeah. If I remember.
Yeah, and then the touchbacks that he's had this year has changed the situation. But to your point about all these young players, I mean, Alabama is still loaded. And people who are writing the epitaph of the Alabama program are idiots because yeah. It's like, no, all those number one recruiting classes, those guys
well,
are still
there. They already rated the odds for next year. It's Alabama, then Clemson, then us for
yeah. That but that wouldn't shock me. But
but be fair about what we tried to overcome last night and all that. Everybody said, well, that's their fifth one in 9 years, okay. But let's just go back to the four they didn't win. Well, we saw last year what happened. The last play
last
of the
second,
game.
Yeah.
All right, 2008 was the first time they didn't get in the championship, and that was because Tim Tebow walked on water in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Over there, and they won. And then they had Auburn beat, and then Auburn came back, and then they did the kick six, and Auburn won in an inexplicable manner there. And then they had Ezekiel Elliott and those guys down 14 points early in the Sugar Bowl in 2015, and inexplicably they let Henry not touch the ball for two quarters and Ezekiel Elliott goes crazy. So the three games that they've lost in championship situations of those 9 years that they haven't won it, plus the one they lost to Clemson, that's just a remarkable run. I mean, it's like John Wooden, what they did yeah. at UCLA or what UConn women's basketball. It's just hard to imagine a team being more in the scenario. But at the same time, you just look at their team. The last year, they probably thought they had a better team than Clemson, and they lost.
Right.
And I feel like last night we definitely outplayed Alabama, and we lost.
Didn't you, did.
You think
I,
we did?
I did. I mean, well, you led them until, what, the four-minute
mark? It's the only time they were in the lead was the last play of the game.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you get down to about the four-minute mark, and they tie up the game. They don't get the lead to the very last play. You were able to run your offensive plays. I thought that the touchdown Mecole Hardman had on that carry,
yep.
You know, I thought that was a
very
yeah. Where yeah, did that go? Why didn't we do some more of that though? That's the yeah. only second guess. I really liked that element. To
I thought the first half was called brilliantly.
Yeah, when you got a chance to, you know, it was one thing to get in a wild, you know, wild dog, but when you got that guy there, he not only can run it himself or hand it off to somebody else, but he can also pitch it or throw it.
He's got a good arm.
That was a brilliant call on the goal line because we got Nauta coming around to block the perimeter on top of it.
And
if you just think about the way we set it up, the last two times we've run that, it's been a complete sweep to Sony or Nick. Well, that time there, hey, he shifted Fromm out, and then he moved old Miko in there a little bit, snapped it to him, he rode him and took it around. That was just brilliant.
So I thought it was really the second half, Alabama's going to make adjustments. They came out with a little change in their defense, made it tougher to run on Georgia. They got to what they wanted to do the first half, which was take away the run, make Georgia go to the air. Georgia had some drop passes. They had some bad throws. They had some penalties. When you look at, to your point, though, what did you do? You went up against Alabama, the big kids on the block. You led them almost the entire game until he was actually tied, then you lose at the end in year two. And I don't want to bang on the current players because, you know, without the seniors on that team, the contributions they had, you wouldn't be there. And without
sure.
the freshmen either. But you had a situation where, you know, some of your upperclassmen made mistakes.
Yep.
Go back to that Dominic Sanders thing. And this game isn't on Dominic Sanders. He started 53 games for you. This you wouldn't
tied
be
for
there.
The lead in interceptions
yeah,
all
you would
time.
Not be there without him. But it's just
yeah,
like that. Go back to that Notre Dame game. Go back to the Notre Dame game with that strip sack of Davin Bellamy. He got it against their first round left tackle. And what did that guy say? He said, hey, I missed. You miss on certain plays.
Yep.
So I know a lot of people are banging on Dominic Sanders, and they're like, well, where's the new guy, you know, or Malcolm Parrish? Malcolm Parrish got picked apart, but again, you wouldn't be in where you were now had not Malcolm Parrish not made plays for you the entire time, you know?
Yeah, how about that play Dom made on the goal line where he almost intercepted?
Yes, he did.
If you get that interception there, then they don't get three, you know, to make it 2013. So a lot of ifs, and but I thought one thing that was impressive to me was Tua, the way he ran the ball there at the end of the game, picking up first downs, which
slippery.
I thought they I thought they had a lot of confidence in the kicker that I wouldn't have had. I would have tried to go on and score there, but that's the, you know, that's me second guess a little bit. But let's get back to our game plan coming out. Everybody looked at us a little bit. We threw seven straight passes to start the game. It basically sent a signal to me, to Jake Fromm, and said, look, I believe in you, Jake. We can throw on these guys. We're going to loosen them up. And then the 3rd and 20 run by Sony Michel down the boundary, it's got to go down as one of the best plays in the history of Georgia football, because it really changed the game around. It went, gave us a chance to, you know, get out of a punting situation there. And that was just an unbelievable run there. I mean, incredible.
Coach, you know, I got to ask you, you're a guy who's been on both sides of this thing. You've won some championships. You've lost some championships. Talk to me. I mean, what's the emotions that this staff's going through today?
Well, I guarantee you one thing. After the game was over, certainly I was walking around. I just went outside and yelled a couple times. I don't know if
I don't think you were alone in that. I bet you heard some screams in the distance.
Wake up my neighbors. But you it's indelible. It's in your brain the rest of your life. You think about the what ifs. And, I don't want to get into what happened to us, but we know we dropped two punts against Miami the 1 year. I mean, basically two even teams, but you give them the ball on the 10-yard line, they're probably going to beat you. Us against Youngstown State, we had a guy didn't line up on the slot, got mixed up, and they threw a touchdown pass and came back and beat us. Montana, we had a quarterback go the wrong way. Youngstown, we had a walk-on kicker come in and kick the field goal to win it. You would have never thought when you had the pregame meal that he would even be kicking.
Yeah.
So all these things come back in your mind. But again, I go back to our preparation and our ability to be ready. I mean, anybody that has anything to do that's watching this Facebook on Georgia football today has got to think, man, we got it humming here now.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. If you just look at the way our kids act when they're in that press situation, you got to feel pretty good about somebody's telling them how to act, and somebody's got the thumb down on them, and that's Kirby and his staff. The other thing is the way we play like our hair's on fire. I mean, play hard, and that's only after 2 years of being here, you know. So I think you don't want to – just sugarcoat this and everything, because teams get beat. I mean, things happen, but I just think we laid it on the line last night. I don't know what else we could have done. Got some bad calls, but that goes with it too.
Well, that's the point I was getting to with, you know, talking about the seniors and where you're getting to this point. You're in year two and you're playing for the national title, and you led the perennial power 90% of the game. You lose at the very end, but Kirby Smart always says, well, there's no schedule. This is ahead of schedule. You're not supposed to be able to do this in year two. And you get there, you lead them the whole way, and you're going to replace you. I'll get to you in 1 second.
Yeah.
The thing about what I was saying about Dominic Sanders and guys like that, when you looked at Alabama, Coach, you said the size of those guys, like 99, that kid is a monster, 6'7", 305 pounds, just or 309, just an absolute beast. A couple times you blocked him well. A couple times he threw your biggest player out of the way, physically threw him aside and got through there. I was looking at their cornerbacks. Alabama cornerbacks are giants. Their outside linebackers are huge. But now you're going to replace guys who got you there with guile and experience. They had better players. You had guys who were very experienced who got you there.
Yeah, I think the difference in our team is going to come up here now to me. Our 1 through 44 is going to really start getting better. Our 1 through 22, which means our first team, is right there. But now I just think if you just look at our squad, the way we look on the hoof and the way we've recruited, but, you know, it's hard to project and look into the future and say exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. But you base everything on fact, and these guys aren't rated like that because they're getting these ratings. You know what I mean? So we're replacing some players that weren't as highly rated. But what happened is these guys were coached up to the max now.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I mean, I try to be on this and give the fans my perspective, and I'm not a homer, although I am a Kirby homer, but I do feel this, that I wouldn't be saying the worst thing you can ever do to your kids, to your employees, or to anybody is give them false praise. I mean, for me to come in here and say, hey, Jake, that was a really good article you wrote, and really it was horse shit.
Yeah.
You know, you don't use the language.
They usually are.
But I'm saying you don't give false praise. So I'm not going to do that. But I am going to say when I do give this that I really feel like that our practices, our player development, our strength and conditioning, the things that we're doing with our players – I don't think anybody in the country is doing any better job than ours.
Yeah, that was kind
and
of.
I get a chance to look at these people because I go around. Now, this last year I hadn't got to travel like I did, but I go watch these teams practice. I go watch when doing TV and radio, and I can tell you right now, we're on the flat out cutting edge. We're the Amazon. We're the
Uber.
We're everything. Who else is up there? Google, Amazon, Apple. We are right there. It's with what we do with our players, the way we feed them, the way we train them, the way we academically prepare them, the way we dress them. Everything about it is as good as I've seen.
I said yesterday before we left Athens to go to the game to cover it, and I still maintain this today. I think it's true. If you had told Georgia fans, I think, prior to this season, that you're going to go play in Atlanta for the SEC title, I think most people would have been pretty satisfied with that outcome.
That was expected.
In year two. That was the expectation, was to get to Atlanta.
Right.
Well, and they were talking about to get to Atlanta to play for the SEC, not the national.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And then, so to go there, to win that game, and then to go on from there, win a thriller, an all-time great game in the Rose Bowl, a historic win for the program. My thing is, I hope people don't lose sight of what was accomplished this season because, you know, we talk – like you said, there's no schedule. Kirby says there's no schedule. I do think this was ahead of schedule. I think it's ahead of schedule
for what
people thought.
But I'm going to interrupt and say, I think you make a great point, but I think the one thing that's really saying is here, our team wasn't satisfied with that Rose Bowl.
Right.
And you can see by the way they played that whole game that they weren't a team that our team was.
I thought they might be. I thought that might have been happy to be there.
You would have thought that maybe, hey, we're going to be a little starry-eyed. And I thought in the the Oklahoma game, we were a little starry-eyed starting the game. We weren't ready for that pace that they put on us, and we didn't play with much confidence the first quarter and a half out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it reflected back on the way we started this game because everybody's talking about, you know, Alabama's a quick starting team. They're hard to get. If you look back, every game they've played in the playoffs, they've started really strong. I mean, even Ohio State game they were ahead. Clemson last year. I mean, Clemson this year. So, but Kirby got in
there.
We got them in their mind. We just pulled their pants down the first half.
I want to ask you too, Coach, because I heard a lot of people mention this last night. And I thought it was interesting. I just want your take. The comparisons between Nick and Kirby are always going to be there. How evident was it last night? I mean, was it as tit for tat as you kind of – was it like coaching against a mirror? Did it feel like that to you?
Well, you know, some of the things for sure were pretty much – both teams came out on the field and warm up the same time. I mean, everything was on the same schedule. But I just – we've got certain things we do differently over here. There's no question about it. But it's hard to make comparisons there. I mean, Kirby is his own guy. He's always been his own guy. But you're going to get people trying to say because he's their lieutenant and, comes from there. But I think there's some really good things that he does that Nick does. But I think he's a lot more – his own man and people give him credit for. And I used to say this, and Kirby would never say anything to me about it, but I used to get so mad about people saying that, hey, well, Nick Saban runs the defense, and, all Kirby is he just –
the front man.
Yeah. But, I've had three different guys that I really know well now that have been defensive coordinators for Nick Saban. Gary Gibbs, who coached here, Coach Smart, and Coach Pruitt. And every one of them have told me, hey, Nick works with us during the week. He talks about what he wants to do, but we run the game. So, I mean, there's a lot of difference between running the game and then somebody thinking that Nick Saban's calling the plays.
Right.
Sure.
I mean, he's in charge. Just like Kirby lets Tucker call the game. He's right there with him and everything. But anybody that thinks that Kirby Smart didn't play a heavy hand in those four national championships that they won over there, I mean, that was awesome. That I mean, and that's helped him coming over here. It's like Switzer, you know. I mean, he never called one play the whole time I was there, but he told me what he wanted, and he let you do it.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier about you're going to replace those very talented seniors and upperclassmen with guys who the raw materials, the starting point for them is a bit higher. Now, will they have the same results? I don't know, but I believe they will because we've seen the development of these players. We've seen what happens with a Tyler Clark.
Sure.
You know, we've seen what happens with a Javon Wims.
Well, look how far you were able to
DeAndre
take it.
Baker. I mean, DeAndre Baker couldn't even start last year.
Yep.
He comes in, replaces Juwan Briscoe, and now people are talking about, is he going to leave early for the NFL?
Right.
I've seen these guys get coached up. So when you're taking – when your offensive line is not made up of a short left tackle, two former defensive linemen, you know – two freshmen.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, those guys played lights out. I'm not banging on them. I'm just saying that what Kirby's doing is getting you similar to the Alabama model where the your 1 through 44, as you were saying, you know, those seconds.
And you're going to have competition
lights
too.
Up. Yeah, the competitions are lights up.
And the other thing that I think we're going to get some questions. The mm-hmm. other thing that I think Nick Chubb and Sony, it's been talked about the leadership they provided and coming back. And, you know, setting the tone and everything. Well, that tone now, everybody realizes it's a lot easier to get somebody to do something hard if they see what the benefit is, you
sure,
know,
yeah.
as compared to what, when you take over a place. But I remember back, and I'm going to give you a quick story, back when Switzer won the first 35 games, they won all of them and tied one. And then a lot of those guys graduated, and then some of those younger guys had been around there and hadn't been involved in those kind of situations, and they started out practice the next summer, and they were practicing a whole lot harder than they did when those great players were there. So they went to J.C. Watts, who was a great quarterback, and said, hey, you need to go up and tell Switzer, what in the heck are we doing? Why are we practicing so hard? He said, we never did this before. And that was kind of like what they did this spring here with Georgia. Why are we working this hard? So he went. He thought about it, and then he came back that afternoon and said, hey, did you talk to him? He said, no. He said, why not? He said, well, I started walking up to the office there, and I looked up on the wall, and I saw some of these pictures of these great players that played at Oklahoma. And I started to think, I said, would they have thought that we were practicing too hard? Would they have thought that the coach doesn't know what he's doing and I'm going to go in there as a leader and ask him that? I believe in Coach Switzer. That's what these guys do. They believe in Kirby Smart.
Yes.
And I strike that parallel there because you've got to set some kind of standard that what one team did might not be the same as far as how to get them ready. You might have to work less next year because they've already done some of it, or in certain areas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So every team has its own personality. But the one thing that's overriding here is the competition for position is daily competition out there.
We've heard it said, and I find myself on this train. I don't want to take anything away from a very special senior class. This may very well be Georgia's least talented roster for the next 3 years.
Yeah,
from a pure talent standpoint,
and that's the point I was trying to make. And you said it a month ago, Coach, or actually 2 months ago. You said, if you're going to get us this year.
Yep.
You know, and if you're leading
everybody but
title,
Alabama,
yeah.
But and even them, you led them for most of the game. So the point being, now next year you're losing a ton of experience. You're replacing them with raw, talented players who will need that experience. There will be some bumps in the road next year. I foresee that. I'm not saying they're going to be back in the title game. Getting to that point is very, very tough. But you were replacing your current players, as you said, with better raw materials.
Yes.
But, and I like how they're going to coach them up. So,
but here's the parallel between last spring and this spring. last spring we knew that we had to make quantum leaps in red zone offense, red zone defense, improve our special teams, all that stuff. And so that's what we did, and we had comparisons to show that, how that got us beat in certain games.
Yeah.
Now, instead of those things that got us beat, they're going to work on those somewhat, but there's a lot more than one force, and you show that to, hey, we were ready for this situation here. When we needed to get 5 yards against Oklahoma to set up our field goal, we ran this play and it worked. That's why we got those three. We did this against Alabama at the end of the half, and we're able to get that extra touchdown because we'd worked hard on that zone read keep. So, you know, you reflect those situations. It's just like a picture's worth a thousand words. Well, that tape's worth a thousand words for situations to help you.
Well, we asked Davin Bellamy at the end, you know, what is this team's legacy? You know, not to take away from anything they had done, you know, your SEC champions, you haven't won one of those in a long time. Your Rose Bowl champions, hadn't had that one in, what, since 75 years. You know, you they have everything they can point to. You played for a national title, haven't done that in 35 years.
Yeah.
But you know what he said? He didn't bring up any of that. He goes, 10 wins is not acceptable anymore. Yeah. So, like you said, Coach, you know, showing, taking someone and saying, look, here are the results. And I've made in my 3-2-1 column, I did so much, I kind of gave Greg McGarrity a little shout out for having the credit for this.
Oh, here's where the crowd turns on
that's
you.
Okay. Well, they turned on me for picking Alabama, too. I pointed this out to your, like you said, Coach, when you show someone what the hard work will get them, it's a lot easier to get them to do something really complicated. Georgia. The university used to ask for money, give us money. We need money for the coach. We need money for the football program. It wasn't until they said, we need money to build X. We need an indoor practice facility that will help us win. We need money for cars to go and recruit. We need money for a plane to have two planes.
We need to redo the stadium.
Yeah, we need to, and they get $61 million. The point being, when you can – give someone a concrete example, A, of, you know, like in that case, what you're spending it on. B, we're going to have ridiculously hard practices. And you, if you're a starter, even if you're Isaiah Wynn, you're going to have to fight for your spot every day because, hey, Solomon Kinley, where'd your spot go? Ben Cleveland came and took it. You know, Juwan Briscoe last year, where'd your spot go? DeAndre Baker came and took it. Guys, you look out there and all of a sudden there's different wide receivers every week.
Yep.
I can't imagine what that's like. I mean, when you look up and you say, hey, Chigbu's starting this week. Oh, Jason Stanley starting this week. Oh, no.
We knew that Ridley was going to play well, but we didn't know it was going to be that one.
No, and then next year, if you think
about their family, they got $5,000. I mean, both of them get – I mean, hey, you got to look at which one said, which one are you going to take the expense check here. But for the fans, sir, it's just the fact that each guy, which they deserve, gets $2,500 for their parents to go to the game. So,
sure, sure.
And it's a lot different for some people who live in Marietta as compared to where they do. But you really make a good – I would say that this team, listening to that, to me, if you go out and see somebody – building the road, you know what I mean? They're, you know, at the end they put the asphalt down, you know what I mean? Or they put the concrete or whatever they got. This team right here was the road graders, man. Yeah. They moved the dirt.
That's a great.
They did everything that was supposed to be. They moved it for the facilities. They moved it for the team. They did everything. They've laid the foundation now. Yeah. You got to go on and finish the building here. And, you know, this is like an interstate that's getting ready to open up and a four-lane from a two-lane detour.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be – but I would say it would be more like what you got over there in Europe, though, where you can go as fast as you want to.
Yeah, so
we're going to be going about 180.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. If you look at what these seniors did, they laid the groundwork that 10 wins is not acceptable anymore. They came back to play their senior season. A lot of them did, you know, who could have, you know, jumped into the NFL. They took on a culture change that was a shock.
Yeah, but it started when he first yeah.
go. But also think so it's a 2-year deal.
Right,
that's what I'm saying. They're the ones that came back.
How about Kirby, though, after the season? He said 8-5, just not acceptable, George.
No. Well, absolutely.
He's self-deprecating.
And yes, sir.
Getting after himself. But, you know, he knew that, and it was there were some games we could have won there. I mean, there's no question. There's some games we could have lost, but – you know, I just see Tua walking out of here right now. Just tough. But yeah. Here's the point. Let's see if we got a few questions here.
Yes, sir. We got one from Laura Wooder. She says, Coach, how would you have handled number 48?
I didn't like that. He's referring to 48, who was going – he ended up hitting a guy and getting a 15-yard penalty. Nobody in America is worth a 15. Then he's over on the sideline having a little altercation with another player and assistant coach. I would have had a hard time putting him back in the game.
Yeah, yeah. Mekhi Brown out of Carver Columbus, Georgia guy, actually.
You just don't do that on the sideline.
Absolutely.
But that, you know, I don't want to second guess anybody.
That was Mekhi.
You just don't do stuff like that in the game. Let's go ahead to the next one.
Yeah. I'll leave that Mekhi story for later.
Well, I mean, you can see it.
I got a couple stories.
You can see it.
I think you do too, if I'm not mistaken.
You can see it on the internet.
Yeah, well, I know. Steve Veronica says, listen, I hate to be that guy, but just watching some replays on the internet titled Officials Kept Missing Calls of Went versus Georgia, the blocked punt that was onside, the missed face mask. He brings this up. There were three abysmal missed calls in that game, and I don't want to harp on them, but when these are legitimate, and Coach, you've seen my stuff on Twitter. I bang on the referees all the time, and it's –
Hey, they got one job. The guy on the sideline's got to call it right. I mean, yeah. they got eight guys out there.
When I was in the locker room, I was talking to Tyler Simmons. He's like, hey, did you see the replay of the offsides? I'm like, no, I didn't, because I was actually walking from one end to the other when that happened and limping along with my bad knee, so I wasn't down there when that part happened. But I said, well, tell me in your words what happened. He goes, I jumped, but not before the ball was snapped. And there is a side on camera that shows him jumping. The ball hasn't moved. He hasn't crossed, you know, the neutral zone.
Right.
The ball.
Hey,
gets
the
back.
Guy missed the call. We can talk about it all day.
He
missed the face mask call. He missed the motion penalty. They missed it.
And they missed the slap in the head.
But yep. What can you do about it?
You can't leave it in the hands of the refs, yeah. Right? I mean, that's
where I was going to get to.
And I think in our defense, we got a very poorly called game on a lot of areas that we didn't get last week. I thought the ACC guys did a great job last week of letting them play. But, you know, it's a human element in football. You saw that with the Chiefs game last week. The guy retired after the game. I mean, the guys make mistakes in the pressure situations. But to me, you can't miss an offside call. It's either offside or it's not, you know. And,
sure.
And the other thing they missed prior to that, which was even worse, was they were moving.
Yeah. Oh,
they,
absolutely.
They had an illegal procedure. So, but well, the guy's a lawyer. The referee's a lawyer, and he's going to look at both sides of everything. That's for sure. What we got next?
They want to know what do you think?
I need some more sweet tea over here. Right? I'm running out of.
What do you think of the rumors about Jacob Eason transferring?
Well, you know, I want what's best for Jacob, because that's in the end, as a coach, that's what you want. If he feels like going to Washington gives him the best chance of being successful, I think he was a good teammate. He never put himself before the team all fall. And, you know, at this point, I'm sure he'll go in and talk to Kirby, and he'll make a decision which is best for him. And the only thing I can say is you know, probably you're better off if you're going to leave a situation like this, go into an area of the country where you're a little bit more familiar and your family's out there. But who knows where he's going. I'd hate for anybody to say Jim Donnan said he's going to Washington.
Yeah, no, that's per a report with the Seattle Times.
The Seattle Times is reporting that. We heard that rumor when we were out in Pasadena that he had told somebody, or his dad had told somebody, he was going to Washington.
Thanks.
I don't know that, but no, I don't know if that's true, but the Seattle Times said they had multiple sources saying that.
I will say, last night, I did not get it on tape, so, you know, don't hold me to the fire on it, I guess, but I as I was videoing Jake Fromm's postgame, someone interviewed Jacob Eason, and he said, that's not a decision I've made yet. Yeah. Haven't talked to people. I mean, and, of course, that was the proper thing to say at that time.
Well, the reporter from the Seattle Times, I was standing next to her when she asked him the question.
Seattle Times was there?
Yes, sir. I can vouch for the fact that
Seattle Times was covering our game?
They had reporters from every
Where do you think Jalen Hurts going next year?
he may want to call up old Lane Kiffin.
Well, apparently, you know, and Jake Fromm is going to transfer because Justin Fields is coming. You know how this is how it works. Everyone transfers when the new quarterback shows up in town. We did get a question earlier from I've lost him. I think it was Sarah. I'm sorry, Sarah, if that's not your question. But she said, would Kirby have – basically with two of – you know, putting in Tua, a kind of a dual-threat guy like that, would Kirby Smart have done that with Justin Fields if he had been available last night?
Sure. If he felt like he gave him the best chance to me. Not that it was Justin Fields or anybody. You always – that's just a situation of the coach. And I think the reason they put him in was because of the passing more than the running. I just think he looks to throw the ball
more, and he
had shown in practice that they wouldn't just been hoping that he could go in there and do it. They had to feel like, I mean, you got too much riding on this for not to go for it. So Kirby's shown a great propensity for making changes, regardless of who it might be. Moving in Cleveland in right guard was a humongous move.
Oh, absolutely.
At that point of the season. So I think it. Every coach, that's a hard decision sometimes to switch quarterbacks. There's no question about that. But here's the way I always look at it. Remember this. What time is it? So I can tell you so everybody remembers.
1:07 p.m.
On January what?
January 9th.
You always change a losing game, and you never change a winning game.
Yeah. Well said.
So if things aren't working for you, don't keep thinking it's going to change. I mean, hey, you got to make some moves. Look at us last week at the half. Look what we went to with more pressure. Look what we did. That's great adjustments by us, you know.
Another question for you, Coach, from Keith Harris. Is offsides challengeable?
No.
Can
you go to the replay on it? No, you can't.
But to me, my question, the reason I asked that, already knowing the answer, why not?
Well, it gets to be a point that, you know, the game lasted almost four hours last night.
I got
it. It gets to be a point where, you know, the guys are getting paid, and they're getting paid a lot to make a call. So, you know, there's certain ones you're going to make knowing that you got the replay behind you just so you got it. But you just can't challenge everything, and that's just the way it is.
Sure. Absolutely. I guess on a higher note, let's look back over the season. I think that's important to do. Coach, any play, any game particularly that stood out to you, anything that kind of made you think, yeah, this is all going on the right track? This
I
is
think
where
Terry Godwin against Notre Dame was just humongous, and then the strip sack to put the game away, and then just the way we showed the poise in the championship game after being down against Auburn after a team had really rocked us. To me, that was a turning point, and knowing that we had a chance to maybe go all the way was that turnaround against Auburn after being down there and, you know, blocking that, doing all the things that we did in the Auburn game and getting that strip sack against them too and blocking that field goal there.
Roddy?
I asked a bunch of players this. When did you
– We don't want the players. We want you.
I'm just saying, because I'm agreeing with them.
Let me just say this. I'm going to hit you with this. So, hey, I have never seen anybody cover anything any better than your dog, what you guys have done for UGA Sports. And I'm going to give you some love.
Well, thank you,
Coach. The depth of the everything, recruiting for sure, but also this – I mean, everything with these guys' blood type. I mean, you guys got.
Hey, I'm working on that. I got some friends at St. Mary's.
Anybody doesn't have that.
David was covered in blood.
We need to get a charge account for this. I mean, and then charge them interest. Anybody says they can't afford, what is it, 33 cents a day?
27 cents a day.
Hey, they got to get that. But give me the answer. I just had to throw that out.
I asked a bunch of players, you know, because we had the open media day, so we could ask we could talk to anybody on the team, and my kind of running thing was, when did you know your team was capable of getting to the national championship game? And, you know, a couple of them started to say, well, you know, in spring practice, and I called bullshit. I'm like, no, come on. And they're like, well, maybe after we beat Notre Dame. You know, they started hedging their bets when I'm like, look, don't give me the answer you've been told to give. And, you know, a couple guys said, you know, in fall camp I thought we had a good chance, but a bunch of them said – after the Notre Dame game, but more of them said after Mississippi State. Because remember, when Mississippi State came in, they were ranked. I think they just drilled LSU.
Yes, they had.
Prior to that. A lot of pundits picked them to come in and beat Georgia, and Georgia wiped the floor with them. And I go back to that opening flea flicker.
Yeah, it was a good call. I mean, hey, you look for a play.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing that I think people need to keep in perspective here. We're going to have some turnover in coaches. That happens. Yeah. Because once you do well, you want your assistants. We're losing Kevin Shear. But I reflect back to 2 years ago when we played Alabama over here and got beat 38-10. Do you realize last night in that game that the University of Alabama, you know how many assistant coaches for Alabama coached in that game?
One?
One.
Wow.
The running back coach, what's his name? Burton.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes, yes, Burton. It is Burton. I forget
Burton
his first name.
Something, but he's only so. But Nick's still there, yep. And that's what everybody's got to remember about Kirby. Kirby's going to be here, so you're going to lose good coaches. Hopefully, we can keep retention in our staff. But just the fact that they've got eight different coaches 2 years later that win the national championship from a team that won it 2 years ago, you know what I mean? Yeah. So don't get too caught up in worrying about what are we going to do about this or who's we lose these players or these guys transfer. I mean
– Kirby has a new coach. Let's give a shout-out to Dan Lanning.
Dan Lanning.
You know, a lot of people are like, who's Dan Lanning? Inside linebackers coach at Memphis?
Memphis, yeah. Yes. Memphis.
Here's the thing about it.
Coached with Kirby at Alabama.
Here's the thing about Kirby, though. There's a lot to be said about – If you had like a guy under you that you've been training and doesn't have a lot of experience out there, but you know what he does on a day-to-day.
Sure.
Dan Lanning was over there with Kirby, just like Schumann was. He knows ins and out. I'd whole lot rather have a guy that I don't have to train that knows my calls and all. Hey, he did the scouting report for Alabama. He gave it to the defensive backs last week because Kirby had him breaking them down. He was looking at all that stuff, and he went in there and presented their scouting report. And that's because he knew Kirby's parlance. He knew what to do on it. So you got your own guy in there, and he knows
how it works.
He's a good recruiter too. He was in the recruiting coordinator there. That's another edge that Kirby brings in. He loves those guys, and I think we're going to get one more coach now for the 10th coach. I would think more than likely as heavy, even though we have five coaches on offense and four on defense. I think we might get another offensive coach just to maybe work with certain skill level, you know, maybe work with the slots or something like that and help us recruit him because we're so heavy with defensive coaches with Kirby working with the defense so much. And I think Tyson Summers might be coming here as a analyst too. We'll have to see about that. But he's a very astute young coach. But
he's flying up the ranks. And I saw Jay Johnson out there. I know a lot of people have speculated maybe he's the 10th coach. I think that would be a fantastic hire.
I promise you, Jay Johnson helped this team immensely. Coach Chaney will tell you he's good. He can't be on the field much, but he was good with technique. And, you know, his son's going to high school here. He loves it out there at Oconee. I wish we could keep him, but same time, you know, we'll have to see there. But
if you're a coach somewhere else and you're looking at Dell McGee or you're an athletic director and you're like, I want Dell, I want James Coley, I want Glenn Schumann, I want Mel Tucker. I mean, you just go down the list because that's a fantastic
staff. We got – I know this – I hope we have a couple more shows, but if you go in parlance about – one thing I used to tell our coaches, we want guys that are all-conference coaches.
Yeah. Sure.
I want a guy that can compete with Florida on the field, in the classroom, recruiting. I want a guy that's the best offensive line coach – the best, you want to be all conference, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I want Roddy to be all conference, the administrator of the year for the UGA. I want you to be the best recruiting guy. You know, you're going against everybody else.
Sure.
So we got to, I mean, Pittman, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Coley, I mean, these guys are experts at their position, and it's just incredible. The way our team's improved from first year to this year, isn't it?
Nobody wants to say it this way, but I think the truth is you want coaches that other people want to hire. Oh, yeah. And you want them to be able to be hired away. I mean, to be that good. That speaks to the, that's a testament to their skill.
That's why you pay them good and make it hard for them to leave. But what I used to say to a guy, just because somebody offers you more money, you got to remember, I tried to pay you as much as I could while you're here, and now all of a sudden I'm going to go in there and get you more just because somebody else. I hadn't been very fair to you. But some of these guys, like that guy Dave Aranda that lost to Notre Dame, second-team quarterback, $2.5 million. I mean, I think he's doing a good job. But
call me.
I thought Chaney.
I'll do it for $100,000.
Chaney had a good.
I'll do it for $100,000.
Chaney had a good.
You do it for a plate of biscuits.
You gonna take a cut? Hey, seriously,
I'm being paid in fish sticks right now.
How about Chaney though? When they're asking about all the different salaries coming, he said, "I think it's good." I think
that was great. Hey, Coach, what do you think of these offensive coordinators making $1 million a year? I think that's a good idea.
Well, they.
And it's a crime that we don't get to speak to Jim Chaney every week. It's just an absolute crime.
And the other thing that was good was talking to some of these assistants. I thought they did a really good job, too. You know, Shearer reflecting on his situation here and moving. And you get, you know, Coach – we got to see Coach Pittman say something beside, "Yes, sir."
All right. Let's shout out the sponsors one more time. And then
– I want to say a special thank you to Athens Ford, Your Pie – Cable East, 365 Game Day, Founders Brewing, Champions on Baxter, and 11 Live Sports.
Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.